Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at mathworks.com.
Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Billy Shatner started out in 1950s Canada as the handsome young Shakespearean actor. What a ride since then. Up, down, William Shatner. Captain Kirk on Star Trek, Denny Crane on Boston Legal, a brand new sitcom now, Bleep My Dad Says, and somehow, at 79, an age he says he scarcely thinks of, he's hipper than ever. With all due respect to James Brown, William Shatner may be the hardest working man in showbiz. This hour on Point, William Shatner. On life, showbiz, horses, acting, his unique persona, and the whole wide world. You can join the conversation. When did you first notice William Shatner? When did you first write him off, only to see him roar back? Do you see the pro, the journeyman actor in each new iteration, each new role? You can also comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me now from Burbank, California, is William Shatner, Emmy Award and Golden Globe Award-winning actor, director, producer, screenwriter, recording artist, author, horseman. He's played Shakespearean heroes, the captain of a huge peace-and-love spaceship, a cop, and increasingly, various irresistible kooks. Now he's playing the shoot-from-the-mouth dad, Ed Goodson, in the new CBS sitcom Bleep My Dad Says. William Shatner, welcome to On Point. Thanks very much for being here.
Thank you very much. That introduction took up half the hour.
Just workload off you.
Really, I guess.
I hate sitcoms, and yet I watch Bleep My Dad Says, and I can't take my eyes off you. It's nothing romantic, William Shatner, but what have you got going? What is this?
What a neat compliment. Yeah, well, I've never watched a sitcom either. I flipped by them and heard about them, but I can't remember anything. I've watched a sitcom that I've watched through for the full half hour. Just not my thing. I had finished 5 years of Boston Legal and was looking around for something, and I was brought this sitcom by these wonderful producers, Max Muchnick and David Cohan, who had done such good work prior. And the premise was son comes back, 26-year-old son comes back to live at home.
Right.
And it was part of a tweet that the young man, Justin Halpern, had come back to live at his own home and started tweeting things that his father, who was a character, said. And within a very short period of time, weeks, he had 1.5 million viewers.
Or Twitter followers. And this actually happened. This is in the real world. This is what happened. He wrote a book about it. Now the sitcom is based on that dynamic.
Exactly. He wrote a book, but the book came a little bit later. Mm-hmm. And everybody smelled that there was something here. And so Warner Brothers and CBS jumped in to see if they could acquire the property, as they say here. And so began a journey, an electronic journey, really, of putting this together and trying to find the voice of the sitcom. And I was blown away by the procedure, by what how a sitcom is made, and especially in front of an audience. And that energy from the audience is something that doesn't take place anywhere else in showbiz other than on the stage or in a stand-up, you know, and that was the unique part of this.
I want to ask you about exactly the dynamic of this. I've got a little tape here from Bleep My Dad Says, of course, CBS sitcom, based on the highly popular Twitter feed by the same name, minus the expletive, and at the heart of it is this politically correct rants of the father.
You, William Shatner, plays the dad, 72-year-old divorcee Ed Goodson III. And here's a clip where Goodson takes his out-of-work son, who's just moved back in with him, out for breakfast, and shows just how un-PC he can be.
I remember you.
I remember you. You're that nice homosexual from the DMV.
Well, not anymore.
I thought it was genetic. Henry, this is that nice man that I was telling you about who fudged on my test so I could pass and I didn't lose my license.
It was very nice of you.
Wasn't it? I got fired for it.
You're kidding.
No, I'm not.
That's terrible. Anyway, I'll have the short stack, the coffee, and the side of Canadian bacon. My kid will have the same.
William Shatner as the dad in Bleep My Dad Says, are you the new Archie Bunker? How do you visualize this role?
I don't know. You know, when you say the words that are recalcitrant or belligerent, I suppose the Archie Bunker comes to mind.
Yeah. I mean, sort of pushing back against lots of things contemporary, making fun of them at the same time.
Yeah. I've always tried to find a wellspring from which the character emerges, even though it's as superficial, perhaps, as a sitcom can be. And still, I have to work the way I work. So I think that the character is probably very lonely and lashes out mm-hmm. because of his loneliness, the bitterness, and it comes out as humor because everybody connected with the show is funny. But I don't know who the character is. The character is going to be an amalgamation of what the writers say the character is. But certainly he's Archie Bunker-ish.
Yeah, what is it like to work? I would think you might feel a little bit trapped. You like the audience, the live audience. It's incredible to think of you in front of them and getting that energy. On the other hand, you've got this rhythm of the sitcom, you know, the sort of joke, canned laughter, laugh track, joke, laugh track.
No, that isn't canned.
That's the real deal?
That's the real audience.
Okay.
And another sort of unique aspect to this sitcom, I don't know about anybody else, is I talk to the audience beforehand and engage them and yeah. say, you know, we've got together, as you point out, jokes, but we're trying to put the jokes within the context of something meaningful. And you guys, I say to the audience, mm-hmm. are an essential part of this process, and you're going to watch us make idiots of ourselves as we right. forget our lines right. and right. walk into laughs. And then you'll watch and you'll see and you will teach us where the laughs are, and then you'll see us form it and it becomes a right. whole, and you'll watch the whole process and they become fascinated and they become part of the process of making a half-hour comedy, and it becomes joyful. You start whittling away at what's excess and so the laugh remains stark if that's what you're after or the moment that's meaningful. And you can hear, like in the theater, you can hear the audience suddenly go silent when something meaningful is being said. And so now you're playing an audience and the energy is totally different than what you had in rehearsal, which was in front of a camera that's 6 inches from your face.
And they are part of the show. You act, they decide, in a way. I mean, they're the fabric. Right along
I invite them in mm-hmm. to be mm-hmm. part of the show, and that's something I never even thought of. It wasn't even a concept when I was in rehearsal and before we got to the audience. And then I realized that the audience is 20 feet away from me, and people are walking on the floor, agents. And
right.
You know, it's like we're doing a circus.
Right.
And it's like we're the minstrels, and people are walking by shaking hands, going, well, isn't it?
And you're the lion and the tamer right in the middle.
Yeah. You expect a clown to come out and do 2-3 cartwheels. All of a sudden, you've got to make a moment. It's really extraordinary.
I got to ask you, and this is a big subject in this hour. I don't know. Just to start into it, it is very clear to me anyway that the writers on Bleep My Dad Says are writing into this. This kind of, later Shatner that's emerged, this campy, zany, kooky, postmodern deconstruction, Denny Crane, who knows where he's going to come from, next persona. It's in there. in this character, what is that persona that you've spun around yourself?
Well, you know, I heard you say in and out and up and down, and he's
your career, his, yeah,
iterations and right, and he disappeared and he came back, and none of that happened.
Come on.
No, well, to you, you're in Boston, right? And you're every so often a tip of a finger emerges, and it's me. And you say, oh, look at that, Shatner's finger. And
wait a minute. Star Trek ended, and you got divorced and lived in a truck bed camper. A truck bed camper, right? I mean, that sounds
true,
like up and down.
I was in front of an audience all that time. I was in a camper because I was touring Boston.
Not because you were broke? Not because you got divorced and...
Well, yes, I was broke and I wanted to save the money, but...
that little matter.
I was working. I was in front of an audience.
Yeah, always working.
So I did, up and down is one way to characterize mm-hmm, it. Mm-hmm. Another way is he appears every so often in front of the national audience in some vehicle. But for me, it's a tapestry.
I mean, up and down is way too simple for this persona you've got now, though. I mean, you sort of defy all the compass settings. I mean, Denny Crane, that kind of character, you never know where he's going to come from.
Well, that's a product of David Kelly, who's a masterful writer, as is Ed Goodson, a product of the writers for our show. It's true that I have done some extravagant things, but to me they're all part of my life. For example, I've just come back, and in fact, it's going on. But, you know, I'll let the music play, and I'll tell you the story about the World Equestrian Games in a moment.
Bless you, horseman and actor William Shatner, joining us today from Burbank. His new sitcom is Bleep, My Dad Says. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour with actor, pitchman, character extraordinaire William Shatner about his life and work, from Captain Kirk to Denny Crane to Horses at Home and his new sitcom, Bleep, My Dad Says. The old Star Trek theme behind us there. When did you first click in to William Shatner? William Shatner joins us from Burbank, California, and what a range of stuff he's done. Here's a little piece. William Shatner kind of having fun with himself, as usual, in a TV ad for the online multiplayer game called World of Warcraft.
Hello, I'm William Shatner, and I'm a shaman. I'm a conduit of the ancient forces of nature. You're no doubt wondering, hey, Shatner, how do I hurl bolts of lightning? Simple. Get World of Warcraft, dog. You can be anyone you want. I'm William Shatner, and I'm a shaman. What's your game?
World of Warcraft, the number one online game. Try it for free at warcraft.com.
William Shatner joins us from Burbank. William Shatner.
Why would you play that?
Well, to show the range.
I know.
Do you have
that? I was about to tell you.
Yes, please. The horses. I wonder if you've got that going on when you're on horseback. That kind of
campman. But something like that happened. The World Equestrian Games are taking place in Lexington right now.
Kentucky, yep.
In Kentucky. Mm-hmm. And last week and the end this week. And they had asked me, because I'm a competitive American saddlebred rider
right.
and breeder and up there. So they asked me to be in the opening ceremony. So I have a world champion, a great horse called Call Me Ringo, who, mm-hmm. who is now breeding, but we keep him going and every so often bring him out to show how beautiful he is. So they asked me to bring him out, and so we did. And I entered this arena, I think there's 60,000 people, and the spotlight hit this horse, and the horse came alive like he never has before. He was so frightened but brave,
yeah.
And the audience rose and cheered, and I went around. I toured around twice and left, and it was a happening that made the papers because it was a sort of wild communication between the audience and myself and the horse.
Via horse.
via horse. Yeah. It was a wild – well, that's the product of 25 years of being in the horse business. So it sounds like what strange thing has he done now? But in fact, it's a continuum of an activity of horsemanship that I do in Kentucky and in Los Angeles.
I wanted to ask you about it. I mean, I love that you love horses. I'm a farm kid, grew up with horses around. Not fancy, not the kind of world you're in there at World Equestrian Games, but very down home. But I love that you've got that connection.
Well, riding is riding. A horse.
That's true. Yeah. But in your interaction, you know very well your interaction with audiences. What about your interaction with horses? Is the thespian skilled communicator at work in that interaction when you're on horseback?
Well, there is a common denominator that I've discovered that I found fascinating to examine, and it's a subject that I go back to all the time, and that is the unity. As an actor, first of all, you have to have that feeling of oneness with whatever it is you're doing. Mm-hmm. You have to be good enough at it to dispense with the techniques.
The mundane.
If you're a skier, mm-hmm. you're mm-hmm. skiing the hill. You're not mm-hmm. wondering if I can stay upright.
Mm-hmm.
On a horse, you've long since forgotten where your feet should
where
be.
Where the stirrups are, right.
Exactly. There. It all becomes mm-hmm. part mm-hmm. of the unity of what you're doing. Mm-hmm. And I have felt innumerable times a unity with the horse I'm riding, so that the horse and I are one. The horse is running and it's me running. There is communication between the horse is in my lap and I'm in the horse's
mm-hmm.
head.
Mm-hmm.
There, it's all one thing. And that same thing applies to being an actor on the stage, where the audience somehow mystically, the audience lines of communication enter my head and leave me and become part of the audience. So that there is a unity of actor and audience that I have felt many times. I know it. I know when I reach it, it's like you're on the like an athlete being on the pipes. You know,
mm-hmm.
you're
there.
You're running and it's effortless.
When have you most felt that? In what role? In what on what stage or screen?
Everything, everywhere.
Yeah,
right
but it
now.
Can't always be the same, huh? It can't always be.
No,
that
at times
unity.
You have to work at it,
mm-hmm.
but you can feel yourself working at it, and I believe the audience intuitively feels you're working at it. But when you're in tune, when it becomes part of you, that the role becomes part of you, and even if though you're removed by a piece of film, and then the film is later played. People seem to be attracted by that feeling that is inexplicable. It's just an intuition by everybody watching or the actor giving. And it's there. And everybody who rides a horse for some time knows exactly what I'm talking about.
If I may, you know, in your jokey Warcraft ad, you say, I'm William Shatner and I'm a shaman. Is an actor at his or her best a shaman?
Absolutely. You're spinning a tale, you're spinning a web, you're spinning a make-believe. If the storyteller is a shaman, if a shaman is a storyteller, then it is all one, exactly. You and I are spinning a tale right now.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to think that somebody in the Boston area or across the country is listening and saying, hey, that's interesting, and is attracted for a second, for a millisecond there. They stop what they're doing and saying, oh, Tom's got Bill, and Bill's got Tom,
yeah.
and I understand. And that's your finest moment.
Keep it rolling right there, then. In the Denny Crane character, what's the world that you're communicating? It can seem so kind of shattered and fragmented. Is that you?
It is.
I know it was written, but is that you tuning into the world somehow, shattered world?
But the unity is loneliness. The unity is coming out of a depth of pain. And out of that pain, depending on who the character is emerges this character. But it's all unified by the need to overcome the pain.
Can we hear a little bit of that? I've got some tape. This is Boston Legal, ran on ABC from 2004 to 2008. Shatner played William Shatner with us now, played Denny Crane, senior partner in a Boston law firm. James Spader plays Alan Shore, lawyer with the firm, close confidant. Here's a bit where Spader comes upon Shatner, lost deep in thought at his desk. He asks him what he's doing. The scene is a send-up of the positive thinking program, The Secret, which claims to deliver wealth, health, happiness.
The Secret, haven't you heard? The law of attraction. Get with the program, man.
What are you talking about?
If you think positively, you become a magnet and pull in everything you want towards you.
Really?
I figure if I concentrate on world peace, maybe I can actually make it happen.
You're sitting here concentrating on world peace.
Oh, God, no. Got to start smaller. I'm thinking Raquel Welch. Get her first, then go for peace.
Yes. In the meantime, how about trying a case with me? I've got a guy charged with trying to help his brother get away with murder.
Is he guilty?
100%.
Come in. But if Raquel Welch shows up...
You have an out.
William Shatner and James Spader. How I love that relationship. Your character,
I forgot that dialogue.
So great.
That's
so
really
great.
Funny.
He's, your
yeah,
character
so
is tipping toward Alzheimer's. And the drama's built around that. Where did you find that energy, that insight? I mean, do you have friends who you've seen do it? Is it just like, let's pull out whatever feels a little wild and off? Or
no,
what?
No. It all... All of us have all the knowledge. Mm-hmm. Every cell has all the knowledge, and you just have to look for it. That goes for everybody. But in my case, you forget something and you think, oh, my gosh, am I getting old? Yeah. I can't remember where the keys are. And then you forget a name, and then you go to introduce your wife. and you say, oh, my goodness, I think it's happening. But then you learn 40 pages
wife?
Of dialogue and realize it might not be.
It's all there all the time. William Shatner is with us. His new sitcom is Bleep, My Dad Says. We've got a lot of callers for you, Bill. Vicky in Sharon, Massachusetts. You're on the air with William Shatner.
Oh, thank you so much. Hello, Tom.
Hi,
and
Vicky.
Shatner. I could spend a long time making comments, but let me start with saying that I've been mad about you for at least 40 years.
Good Lord.
Through all your escapades. And I recently read your biography, which I would recommend to everybody listening. It is so delightful, and it's so sweet and poignant. I particularly liked your growing up, your childhood. Also,
Montreal. What keeps you coming back to William Shatner, Vicky? What's the essential appeal?
Well, when I was in college, we had a huge Star Trek group that was very faithful to the show, and then the TV stuff. And actually, in the town I live in now, in Sharon, Massachusetts, we have quite a collection of big Trekkie fans that know every episode word for word. We get together for that. I think it's his believability. Mr. Shatner, I think you're very believable in all of your roles. And I particularly love Denny Crane, as I think many people do. I'm so looking forward to your new show.
Give him a question, Vicky, if you'd be kind enough. You have a question for William Shatner?
A question, yes. What will come after this show? Do you know?
Okay.
Well, I'll tell you what I'm working on. While I'm doing this show, which I think will evolve, we're finding the voice, Vicky, we're finding the voice of this show. How many jokes, how serious, what's the relationships? We don't really know until we do it, and then when we do it, we say, oh, that worked, that didn't work. Sometimes, like this week, we get a script and we read it, and the management says, not good enough, and they toss the script out. So today I'm not working because tomorrow a new script is coming in as we try to find the best way to make you laugh and maybe touch you in this show called Bleep My Dad Says.
Can you ever find the complexity and the nuance in this format that you had in Boston Legal? It's a very sophisticated show, and I watch this one and wonder. Can't stop watching you, but it's a sitcom. It's got that formula.
I hope I can. I hope in moments. If I can make you laugh, but at the same time saying, I saw a guy, and I laughed, I'm getting people now saying, you know, I'm embarrassed. I was in the room alone watching a show, and I laughed out loud. Isn't that silly? I've heard that so many times. If I can touch you and make you laugh— at the same time. That's what I'm going for. If I can make the laugh line without the ha-ha, but get you to laugh, but understand where it was coming from, then I've achieved something that's sort of mystically I'm trying to do.
Let's go to Ed in Walterboro. No,
I was going to try and answer
Vicky's
question.
Oh, you've
Vicky's
got another
question.
Next. Please, yeah.
In that the things I'm doing now, I'm in the middle of working on an album, a concept album.
Are you singing?
Singing, rhythmically. I'm editing a documentary, just so happens, on the six captains of Star Trek. I went this summer and interviewed everybody. And I'm putting it all together right now.
Patrick Stewart and all the rest.
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry?
Patrick Stewart and all the rest.
Absolutely, Patrick Stewart, who's wonderful. And he gives a marvelous interview. And I've got hours. I've got 60 hours of talk. How do I whittle that down to an hour and a half? That's the problem.
Good luck.
Yeah, really. And then there's this show, and there's so many other things I'm doing that that's the future as well.
Ed, in Walterboro, South Carolina, you're on with William Shatner.
Hi.
Hi.
I just wanted to comment that I've been a fan of William Shatner ever since the episode on the Rod Steiger show.
Twilight Zone.
Twilight Zone, Airplane. I've been a big fan ever since then, and I think your new show is wonderful.
Thank you so much. That's quite a history, because that goes, the Twilight Zone goes way, way back, and now here you are in 2010.
It's amazing.
That's fabulous.
We've got another call right on that point from Las Vegas. Greg, thanks for calling. You're on with William Shatner.
What a thrill to be talking to the great William Shatner. The amazing thing about that Twilight Zone episode, which is an absolute classic, not only the whole show, but that particular episode, the thing that it brings to mind is that there were so many actors who were on that show who had a brilliant future ahead of them, but were not necessarily big stars at the time. Robert Redford, Burt Reynolds, it just goes on, and yourself. And I wondered how that came to be. Did they come to seek you? Were all the really talented, gifted people just trying to get on the show? I mean, it's just amazing. I mean, you can just tick off probably dozens of them. And I wondered also, what was the atmosphere of the show like? What was it like working with Rod Serling? Just the whole idea when you were cast, and did you compete for that part?
Thanks, Greg. Bill?
Yeah. Well, it was a half-hour show. We're talking about almost the equivalent of the sitcom. Mm-hmm. It was a half-hour show. It wasn't extraordinarily popular at the time. It was popular, but it wasn't the smash hit that we all think of it as being. And I got a call, and this is sort of way back in the mists of memory. I got a call, and I did it as a work a day. It was a lovely script for a young actor being basically alone in the airplane. And I did it, and there's this guy in this stupid suit on the wing. It looked funny, and I thought, I hope this isn't going to be like the laughing stock of the industry. And then what happened, of course, and I'm not quite sure exactly what happened, but it obviously touches a universal of if we were meant to fly, we would have wings philosophy, so that everybody who sees that, or a lot of people who see it, identify with the fear of flying. And I think that's the universal it touches. But as for the talent that accrued to Twilight Zone, I think what happened was the casting people and Rod Serling himself knew the bright young talents that were coming up, didn't want to pay an arm and a leg as they would have to establish talents that were prevalent at that time. So they cast the young people, and those young people got older, and they were obviously very prescient in that some of the people they chose became very popular.
William Shatner, please stand by in California. Behind us right now, I Can't Get Behind That, William Shatner and Henry Rollins on his 2004 CD, Has Been. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
What's the problem?
What's the problem? What about the men who say, do as I do? Believe in what I say for your own good, or I'll kill you! I can't get behind that!
I can't get behind that! Everybody knows everything about all of us!
That's too much knowledge!
I can't get behind that!
Drivers using my streets to learn. If you learn to play the drums, you gotta go to a studio. Go to a parking lot, for God's sakes! Why are you jeopardizing my life?
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Talking today with actor, pitchman, character extraordinaire William Shatner, the theme from Boston Legal behind us right there. But boy, has he done a whole lot more, done it for a long time, and still doing it with so much gusto. You know, Bill, we had the question about Twilight Zone and everybody back then. You talked with Pat Jordan for the New York Times. People may have read it about a month ago now in the paper. Pat pointed out, you know, when you got going, I mean, your name was right there in the same breath as contemporary Steve McQueen and Paul Newman and Robert Redford. What decides the arc of an actor's career up in the league that you've played in? What decides it?
You mean how does Paul Newman become Paul Newman?
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, you've got a very distinctive track that yours has taken. Theirs are more kind of classic leading man arcs, but even they each has his own. What makes the difference? Is it just serendipity? Is it something the actor's character?
Fortune. No, good fortune. Luck, just the exigencies. For example, I was in New York playing in the theater and playing on Broadway, and they asked me to come to Hollywood, and they signed me to a contract in the last year or two of when actors were signed to studio contracts. Paul Newman was at MGM mm-hmm. when I got to MGM as a young actor. A year or so later, I asked MGM to let me out of the contract because I wanted to go back and do a play. So they very gladly let me out of this long-term contract. Mm-hmm. Paul Newman, to take that as an example, stayed in Hollywood, made these wonderful musicals, he's a great actor, making these great films. I blundered into New York and spent 2 years working in the theater, came back. It's just the devious paths that your life takes that there are many, many actors who had an extraordinary chance and then dropped out of sight and are working as busboys who never got another shot at it. Many, many actors do things for a while. The essential part of them, perhaps it was their beauty or their youth or mm-hmm. their uniqueness for that moment. But as they aged, they became part of a large group of aging actors, and they started falling out of work, and then you've forgotten them, and they're trying to right now scrape together a living.
Yeah. And over the years, when you look at those guys, I don't know, McQueen or Paul Newman, Robert Redford, I mean...
Well, those are the exceptions that are stars that made...
But you were playing in their circle.
The names you don't know? What about the names you don't know?
Yeah, well, we know your name very well all these years later.
No, I don't mean my name.
Of course, but I wonder, were you over the years, were you envious of their kind of glossy leading man style of star power while your career was, you know, taking in all kinds of action and is still very vital now?
Well, what I know that you may not know is mm-hmm. that the movie stars that make a movie or two a year spend months doing nothing, getting ready to do the film, waiting for another film. And when they start the film, the tempo of the shooting of the film is lethargic. I mean, you'll do a shot and then you go into your dressing room and wait for the next shot. And I don't know how you keep yourself together during these long hours in which you're doing nothing.
Ride a horse.
Well, Chris Reeves did bring a horse.
Superman.
Did you know that?
Yeah. Well, I didn't know he brought it. I knew he had his terrible accident on it.
No. Yeah, but before his accident, mm-hmm. Frequently, I don't know how often, but frequently, he'd have in his contract, he had to bring a horse. The management had to bring a horse to the location, wherever he was, whether it was in Timbuktu or not. So my career has been frenetic in many ways, filled with activity, because I guess that's me. I don't want to lounge around.
You weren't envious? I mean, you know interviewing.
No, I was
never
envious.
You've got your own show, Raw Nerve. You know, let me just ask it that way. You weren't envious of these guys?
No, I don't believe I was envious. I'd look at it and understand it, but I was working, and when I was able to save some money and I didn't feel that I was in dire penury, I don't remember being envious. I'm certainly not now.
Let's go to Louisville, Kentucky, and Jonathan. Jonathan, you're on the air with William Shatner.
Hi, Mr. Shatner.
Hi, Jonathan.
I really like your albums, everything from The Transformed Man to Has Been.
Thank you.
I guess I'm just wondering, how did you get into doing that?
Well, I love the spoken word, and I was trained as a classical actor, and I understood the rhythm of words and the onomatopoeia of words, the words sounding like they mean, and it seemed to me like a piece of music. And then really a long time ago on talk shows, because I wanted to do something else other than just talk, I would take a song that had a good lyric to it and try and find follow the melody, but say the words as an actor would. So I did in this Transformed Man, which got a lot of laughter, but my intention, for example, in the Transformed Man was to show how the lyric of a song is part of the literature of the time. And that it can be acted. It doesn't have to be sung. A great lyric can be performed, and that's what I was trying to do. And so it kind of metastasized. I'm preparing right now a record, an album in exactly that way, taking lyrics that have a meaning for me and giving you an arc. And right now the title is Seeking Major Tom.
Seeking Major Tom, something about that I like. When you do that, you know, very often a lot of the things you do, it comes across to a lot of people as sending them up. Is that deliberate?
Well,
or is
sometimes
it
is. Sometimes it isn't. Sometimes it is and sometimes it isn't.
Got a little
Go ahead.
We've got a little bit here from Has Been, just for people who may not have heard this. I mean, you've taken many sort of turns on the singing track. In 04, worked with recording artist Ben Folds to produce that CD, Has Been. Here's a moment from the track, It Hasn't Happened Yet.
Eyes wide open, trying to remember what I might have done, should have done. At my age, I need serenity. I need peace. It hasn't happened yet.
William Shatner on Has Been there.
It hasn't happened yet.
Whispering it right on down. Okay, that sounds serious, I guess, but you often sound right on the edge of sending up the thing. Why is that?
Well, I'm on the edge because it's never been done. I don't know quite what I'm doing.
But I'm not sure if you're joking or serious when you give
us that. Well, I wrote with Ben, I wrote most of those songs there. I wrote the lyrics. And Ben Folds, this genius musician, wrote the melodies, and then he put it down. We got a great musician. I spent 2 weeks in Nashville making an album. Can you imagine what an experience that is for somebody? Walking around with Ben Folds in Nashville.
Sounds
with
great.
All these great. Yeah, it was fantastic. And this album, Has Been, was highly praised by the critics. I mean, I think Has Been was a success. Some of the lyrics, some of the songs are send-ups. Others are not. And if you listen carefully, you'll hear the meaning behind the lyric. Singing is a precarious place to go because you're neither singing nor you're neither talking. And if you accept my premise, then you go with me. If you don't, you laugh at it.
But when you
and
when
I take
you,
that chance.
When you were with we heard Henry Rollins earlier. I can't get behind that. I mean, you just push it way out there. That I'm not sure
Henry,
the right adjective is. But what is the Shatner energy going on there?
Well, here's what happened. I wrote the lyrics.
Yeah.
Asked Henry to come in. He wrote some lyrics. We put the lyrics together. Ben has a degree in drums. from some university. I mean, he studied the drums, not the keyboard. And then he started doing percussion. He hired somebody from Nashville who was like one of the great percussionists. And then he started layering percussion. So now you have all this percussion going on. And the rhythm of the words are being matched. I don't want to go. I got to go. And everybody's all together doing rhythm. Rhythm of words, rhythm of Henry, rhythm of Shatner, rhythm of Ben Folds. And this guy's name I can't think of, on the drums. It's a fantastic happening. It was riffing.
It's great, but the thread running through there that catches everybody is William Shatner. That's what is that? That angry, blustery, surreal.
Well, it's not bluster. It's loud.
Well, okay.
There's a difference.
Yeah, no, there's a difference. It's certainly a character
well,
of volume.
You can't whisper that stuff.
No.
It comes out. It's a ba-da-ba-ba-da-ba-ba-da-ba-boop. You know. Anyway, whatever it is, I'm doing my best.
That's great. Columbus, Ohio. Ingrid, you're on the air with William Shatner.
Hi. I just wanted to say, first of all, that Boston Legal was amazing. It really, I loved how anyone could sit down and watch it. I'm younger, so I didn't really grow up with Star Trek, but my mom and I would sit down to Boston Legal, and we'd both laugh and have a great time. But with such a big career, I was just wondering how you, Mr. Shatner, how did you take that first step into getting into that career? And was there anything that really touched you when you were a kid that made you want to do that? I just think it's amazing.
Thanks, Ingrid. Bill?
Yeah. Well, it's true. That's exactly what happened. Something happened in my childhood that sent me on my way. I did a camp play. I was at some little camp for a couple of weeks in the summer and did a camp play and apparently moved some people, and I got approbation. People said, oh, how wonderful. And that sort of sent me on the path. And I'd never done anything else. I've never made a dollar in any other way. I've never taken any money for anything else. I've never had unemployment insurance. I've only made my way as an actor, as a writer, or something connected with show business, and it was part of my being. I was destined to do it, I guess.
Charleston, South Carolina. John, you're on with William Shatner.
Hi, Tom. My favorite William Shatner moment is when he sent himself up in the movie Airplane 2. And William, I just want to know, how did that feel?
That sort of crazy man on the moon depiction there.
Well, right, it's risky. Yeah. It's risky because you don't know how it's going to work out. And one of the things I wanted to, when I came into the studio, I guess the thing that I was thinking of was how everybody knows nothing. Nobody knows anything. That goes for politics. It goes for solutions. Brain surgeons are stumbling around trying to find the right nerve, but at least that's there. But in some creative area, in the creative areas, you really don't know. So for me, it was just hoping that I was making the right choice, that to me it didn't seem ridiculous or foolish. I had an intention of some kind and hoped that the audience would at least go with it, if not admire it.
Have you ever been given a role, a part, something to read anyway, read it and said, no, that's not for me, that's too far out there?
Too far out. Well, I don't know what that means. But,
well, I'm not
but
sure either,
I
beyond your boundaries
down,
somehow.
Well, having boundaries is a mistake too, because it gives you the, it encases you in a shell, and you say, well, that's beyond my boundaries, and you're already shrinking. I don't think you should have boundaries.
Amen. Amen. One more call. New York, Phoenicia, New York. Wayne, you're on with William Shatner.
Hi, Mr. Shatner. I just wondered, have you given any thought to how you'd like to be remembered? What have you written an epitaph for yourself, or
No, I haven't. Well, my epitaph is my work and my family. I certainly am thinking quite frequently about death, and yet I still have the energy and the health where I think it's not going to happen to me. So I'm veering more towards, yes, it is going to happen, but I don't quite accept it. I don't quite accept my own inevitable death yet. I'm still in that 18-year-old stage of nothing going to happen to me.
You're certainly charging around, doing a lot. Tell us a little more. We've just got a minute. Tell us about your horses. We'd love to hear about your horses and what's going on there, Bill.
I ride as a reining quarter horses here in California. I won a saddle this past year for the High Point Amateur Rider. That means as an amateur reiner on the West Coast, California, mm-hmm. Oregon, and Washington, I've got more points than anybody else.
At 79, that's not a problem? You're the man.
I don't know. I'm fine.
Wow.
It probably is, but I'm not recognizing it. But I am the top amateur reiner on the West Coast. I've won world championships with saddlebreds, and I've won world championships behind trotting horses called American Standardbreds. I have all three, and that saddle is my proudest accomplishment. It means more to me than any of the awards that I've ever won.
The saddle. Well, that's just terrific. That's where William Shatner sits. William Shatner, the new TV sitcom is Bleep, My Dad Says. It's been just terrific having you this hour. Thank you very much, and good luck with the show, Bill.
Thank you, Tom. Same to you.
William Shatner joined us from Burbank, California. We'll go out with William Shatner and Brad Paisley with Has Been from his 2004 CD. Listeners, thanks very much for being with us. You can continue the conversation, get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. But I eat and sleep and breathe and bleed and feel. Sorry to disappoint you, but I'm real.
I'd love to help the world and all its problems, but I'm an entertainer.